The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 418. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, everybody?
And Brian Monjoma.
What is up, party people?
Yeah, man, another weekend, another Throw Down Your Questions, man. We don't know what's going on with Adam. He may be watching The Last of Us soon. I think that show's done right now. The episode, apparently it's a good episode. People seem to like it. So that's good. So we'll see. And Chris is still indisposed. He is still healing. So shout out to Chris. He'll be fine. We talk to Chris every day. He's fine. He's doing good. He's just,
you know. He'll be back better than ever.
Yeah, right. Stronger than ever. Talk about Nintendo some more, you know.
he'll have this fresh new Austrian accent. The more contact they have with humans, the more I learn. Because now he's like a cyborg now. He's got metal inside of him, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he does. So, yeah, he's still healing. Good stuff, man.
He's more machine than man.
Yeah, right. All right, man, let's get into it, man. Questions.
Real quick, shout out to James the Wake for the bits.
Appreciate that. You guys keep the dream alive, you know? All right, man, let's get into it. First question here, Mob Hits. So his question is, did Microsoft just intentionally kill 343 Industries? Is this the end of Master Chief? This is kind of a follow-up to our main topic from the last episode, the Thursday show, where basically 343 Industries, this is interesting because the report was they're not going to be making any more Halo games, but now 343 came out to say they are making Halo games. So we'll get to that question later on, you know? But it's still a good question. It's like, if 343 Industries, a company that was made specifically to make Halo games, will no longer make Halo games, what's the point?
I mean, like, I definitely think that something is probably going to be changing. Well, here's the thing, like something is going to change over there. I definitely think so, right?
There has to be, yeah.
Because, like, you know, you have so many, they had so many sort of, like, flops with the Halo franchise. There's only so many people that you can switch out or change around. I think a lot of time, to be honest, the really big way to save this stuff is not to kind of get all the cooks out of the kitchen, number one. Number two is, like, I think maybe they need to send it to somebody who has a little more experience making these sorts of games now.
Yeah.
You know, send the same writer over, you know, whoever the writer for the Halo franchise is, they seem to be doing okay, right? I don't know.
I don't think so, man. I mean, didn't they get rid of, like, the lead guy?
Yeah, there was that original guy that they got rid of, right? From the first few Halo games?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about, yeah, he's gone. But they brought him on after the other guy who was doing Halo Infinite, you know, was, left. So it's just been a mess. So,
yeah, I mean, who's the person that's in charge of, you know, the creative stuff? I mean, it feels like they have a new director every year.
Pretty much.
So I don't see, like, where the direction's coming from for the franchise. Like, you can't, like, a Halo factory is only a factory if you have people that are adequate at making Halo games. You can't just say you're making a Halo factory and can't produce. Like, it's, you know, what they've done is they're just, you know, mid-tier games, and they're messing with their biggest franchise. You know, the Call of Duty deal, the Activision deal hasn't gone through yet, so technically Halo is still their biggest franchise. Maybe Elder Scrolls, but yeah, like, it's, I don't understand how they just dropped the bag with this franchise. It was the biggest in gaming at a certain point in time.
Yeah, they really messed it up, man. But again, you know, this is a question some guy named Eurocar asked too.
Oh.
You know, what are your thoughts on 343 Industries saying they will continue doing Halo? So this is confusing, right? Because the report said they're not going to be doing Halo, and then 343 Industries comes out and say they will do Halo. As a matter of fact, I'll just read their statement. It's literally a sentence. 343 Industries will continue to develop Halo now and in the future, including epic stories, multiplayer, and more of what makes Halo great. And, yeah, Pierre Hintz, studio head. So,
I'm going to say this. You know, that doesn't
Halo just and Master because Chief are here to stay, so that answers that part of the question too.
Well, I mean, to be honest, like if you think about it, you could say that for a bunch of, you know, they could say, yeah, we're still making Halo games, but it doesn't need to be mainline Halo games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and didn't Bonnie Ross leave too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the studio's in shambles, man. It really is.
I find it like funny that they announced that and a lot of the Twitter reactions like, oh God, oh no, this isn't good news.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. They're saying it proudly like, we're still doing it. Don't worry, guys. Don't worry. We're still steering the ship. It's going on.
Please, no, don't.
So yeah, I mean, it's not a good sign when most of the fan base is just not in line with the studio that's making one of their favorite franchises. Yeah. No bueno, man. No bueno.
Yeah. It's fucked up. All right. Any other thoughts on 343 Industries?
No.
Yeah. We got more questions about it. So, you know,
something needs to change over there, man. I don't know if it's just management. But right. with all the downsizing and all that stuff, is any of the people that make those games, who made those initial other games, even there anymore?
No.
You know?
Well, and a better question would be, were the people that transferred from Bungie to 343 even the good ones?
Yeah. Could have been the C-team. Like,
it could have been the C-team. It could have been. So, you know, maybe everything that made Halo great was just left with Bungie to make Destiny.
Yeah.
I you know, with me, you guys have mentioned this as well. Give it to another team, man. Yeah, just try something different out, man, because this is a waste of a franchise.
It really is. Like, this is just bad right now, you know? But I don't know. It's depressing. It's like, what the fuck can you do, you know? All right, moving on here. So this is related because Halo Infinite obviously was a live service game, pretty much. You know, I know it had a campaign and all that, but it was basically built as a live service game. So the next question is related to that. Also from Mob Hits, should publishers stop chasing live service games since most have failed? The top three that come to mind, you know, as far as failures go, are Halo Infinite, Marvel's Avengers, and basically anything Ubisoft makes. If Adam was here, he'd already stop me. With that said, Sony announced it has 10 live service games in the pipeline. Should Sony change course? Listen, man, it seems like it's too little too late. You know what I'm saying? Like, some of these like live service games, specifically like Avengers and stuff, like, it seemed like, you know, when it was first being developed, live service games were hot, for the lack of a better term. And they're like, oh, we got to start this now. But it's like, okay, a bunch of years later, they're not all that anymore, you know?
To be honest, like, the thing about it is that, like, the live service, like, space is such a hard space.
Yeah, actually,
like,
you know what? I should take it back. The biggest game in the world is a live service game, Fortnite.
Yeah, Fortnite. But yeah, the thing is that they're all chasing the Fortnite. But the thing about it is that there's very few that can, you know, studios that can possibly say that they have a successful live service game.
Yeah. The only ones I could think of are obviously Bungie with Destiny. And yes, The Division is also another success, right? Not as big as Destiny, but that's another one.
This reminds me, the closest analog I can give to this is old school, like World of Warcraft, right? Like the, you know, 20-year-old game. Here's the thing about it, though. Nobody ever dethroned it. Like, it's still pretty much the undisputed king of MMOs now. I just found this out recently. Like, the player base on all the MMOs, like, WoW is still fucking up there. I'm amazed and shocked, but it kind of goes to show you, like, these kinds of games, when they become this entrenched, they don't necessarily just fuck off after a while or even get dethroned. It's
It's a lifestyle for some people. They're not going to jump ship.
They just continue to keep generating money. But the thing is that now it's like it's difficult to crack that, to get to that point where it becomes that thing, that constant money generating cow, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, and Sony apparently has 10 of these. All right, bro. We said this on the previous times. It seems like they're just throwing shit at a wall to see what sticks.
Exactly, because they want a little bit of that thing, because they see, like, you know, you can literally put out the groundwork of a live service game, right? And then just keep updating it until it actually starts looking like something.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. So, yeah, go ahead.
You could do an unfinished game and call it Infinite.
Oh, wow. When Adam told me, he's like, hey, you want to play Halo Infinite? And I'm like, okay. So we got the online co-op. So it's like, all right, we can finally play this game. So we went to the campaign and we started playing it. And it's like, this doesn't seem like a Halo kind of experience. It's like, you know, it feels like Destiny. It feels like you're playing Destiny. It's just this open map with a whole bunch of like little places where you can do things. And it just doesn't feel like that same experience anymore. And, you know, Halo needed to evolve. We understand that. But when it just does something that's just like everyone else, that doesn't really lead to much innovation, which is what Halo was, you know, known for in the beginning.
Yeah. They were called Combat Evolved.
Yeah, they were the biggest, specifically for consoles, you know, big on the LAN party side. Then they became online infrastructure with Xbox Live, and they had clans, and then they had map editing in. And this is, I'm talking about consoles, like obviously PC's done this for years before them. But for consoles, you know, they were doing all this type of infrastructure that no one else was doing. And then they just 343 took the reins, and they're like, okay, let's do the exact same thing they were doing, minus some features, with a story that's quite not as good as what it used to be. And then they went and they're like, oh, we're failing. It's not, Halo 4 and Halo 5 aren't doing as well. So what should we do now? And it looks like some higher ups were like, hey, you know, Destiny's a big thing. Let's
some of you guys used to be with that company.
you guys can email them on some hints, tips, and tricks.
They're both in Seattle, man. They're all both in Washington, Redmond, Washington, not far from each other.
Logic One says, I still play Halo regularly. The core gameplay is great. The problem is a lack of content, updates, maps, expensive cosmetics.
And I mentioned this last show. The gameplay is awesome. It feels good.
Yeah.
I remember in the beginning when I first played, I don't know if it was the beta or the first day I was playing multiplayer. It just seemed like they're catering towards the microtransaction crowd, you know, with all the skins and stuff. And I don't know. It's just not the same.
The damn shame. All right. Let's move on here. Jay Shep in the house. So his first question is, should Starfield replace Halo as Xbox's next flagship franchise? Something needs to, you know. I don't think it's going to be Gears of War. Sorry, Adam. You know, it could be it. I mean, we don't know. It's really going to be seen more as a Bethesda game more than anything, I think. But I don't know. Adam, how much where you are? 18 minutes. Got to have something, you know.
Got to have something. It's hard with the Bethesda games, the mainline Bethesda games, because they're not as frequent as, you know, like the Call of Duties, the Destinies, those types of games. Like they develop one game at a time, and for the most part, they usually take their time with their games. I think the quickest before was Elder Scrolls. You know, they did Elder Scrolls, Oblivion, and then Skyrim, and then like they did those like kind of fairly close to each other. But then after Skyrim, it's like, all right, we're gonna wait 10 plus years for the next game, the next Elder Scrolls game. And it's, you know, Starfield releases this year. Who knows when we'll get a Starfield 2. So
that's a good point. You're right. Like, to be a core franchise, you need to release semi-regularly. Starfield 2, that shit ain't coming out for another 10 or more years. you know?
Yeah. We'll have a Fallout and an Elder Scrolls in between. We have another Starfield.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't, you know what, to that effect, no, it can't, because they don't release frequently enough, you know? Bethesda rightfully has the mantra of, we release games when they're done, even though they're broken as fuck when they come out, but still, you know? That's just how they are. They don't really pump out games that much. So I don't think so. I don't think Starfield can be the next franchise for Xbox. Damn shame. Xbox, man. We got some more questions related to Xbox.
I mean, are you guys just saying, like, it can't be a franchise because it's going to take too long to actually develop into a multi-title franchise?
It can't be a flagship.
Flagship.
I mean, why? If it's good enough.
No, but if you don't release a game at least every 2 years, it's not really going to, it's going to be forgotten fast. Understand?
That's not true.
Yes, it is. That's how it usually works. Remember, PC
games are usually different. I actually highly disagree with that. I mean,
none of us Gran Turismo games that are released every 2 years.
Yeah, but I don't know. Give me the counter argument, please.
If it's a critical success after a couple years of being in that slot of critical success and most likely releasing DLC,
Look what you just said, though.
Yeah, I'm not saying it needs multiple titles. DLCs will do it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
There you go. I'll give you that. But the point is, you're making my point, though, Brad. I'll let you finish. You got to keep in the public conscious. Understand? That's my point.
If Skyrim has been in the public conscious for 10 years.
Yeah, but
it's because they keep re-releasing it.
It's always there. Yeah, there you go. You're making my point for me.
I mean, maybe a hybrid point. I'm like, I'm not entirely disagreeing with you, but here's the thing. Everybody knows that's what's going to happen with this, because that's how Bethesda does their games. Is the next mainline Bethesda installment, so it kind of gets the goodwill of the previous mainline Bethesda installments.
Yeah. If they release DLCs frequently, it could be. You're right about that. I didn't think about the DLC factor.
Well, we will get DLCs for sure. I mean, that's Bethesda staple. But as far as it's being a franchise, once the Starfield dust settles, I feel the Starfield 1 dust settles, I feel like it'll be another decade before we get a Starfield 2.
Yeah, exactly.
I do too. Well, like, and I guess that's why I'm saying, like, I'm not disagreeing that it's not technically a franchise, but I think it can be a flagship title without being a franchise.
It could be, but Brian mentioned Gran Turismo as a counterpoint, but Gran Turismo was releasing like every 2 or 3 years when it was coming out.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, you know, yeah. If we're talking multi-title franchise, then I think that's a different discussion. But I think the spirit of the question is kind of, is this going to be a tentpole title for them?
It's going to be a big seller for sure, you know?
Yeah. Well, not a big seller, a big streamer.
Yeah, a big, yeah, right. Real quick, and also to that spirit, Logic One says, we get one God of War game every generation, yet God of War's a flagship franchise. But think about the first five of those games, man. They came out real fast.
Those games came out literally like 2 years or 2 years or less from each other.
Yeah, because like
it was the end of God of War 1 was considered the end of the PlayStation generation. And then they released God of War 2.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, like, you know, to be like a flagship guy, you release a few of them in kind of rapid succession every 2 to 3 years. Then you could probably start slowing down. Like God of War is a good example of that, you know?
I disagree with that, because one, that was back in the PS2 games, PS2, PS1 days. Like game dev was very different back then compared to now. Like, I don't think you can release that rapidly a quality title, because it's just not physically possible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Even if it's five years between titles, the Starfield 2 is not going to come out 5 years from now.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, but Brian, you bring up a good point though. It's like, can you have a brand new flagship franchise given the fact that it takes so long to make games now?
Yes,
Excluding Bethesda aside, again, because I don't want to jump on Brett's argument there, is I think you can if the title itself is noteworthy in some degree, like Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs, if you exclude the last game, it got really popular off the first two games. And they weren't really in quick succession. They were a couple of years apart, but they were noteworthy in some degree. They had some sort of potential. So I think if you do the right things, if you use the right formula, then I think you definitely can. But
I don't think Watch Dogs is a good example.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the semantics of what we consider flagship.
Yeah, because like the first game only sold well because of the hype. Everybody was kind of mad at it. The second game was like critically received. I don't know about its sales numbers. And we all know what happened with Watch Dogs Legion. You know,
and that's why I said excluding the third game. Like,
yeah, I know, but I don't even think including the first two games. I don't think that counts.
Again, this is still like a new IP. Like, if you look at the history of new IPs, they don't really do all that great. I mean, if you take the last 10 years or so and look at the new IPs, like, there aren't that many of them. That's why I said,
yeah.
At least if you go with something like Watch Dogs or Destiny, for example, these are like, okay, these are new IPs that have had some defining moments in them. So it's definitely as possible, and hence why I said you need to do the right things. What the right things are, I have no idea. So that's where my argument kind of falls apart there.
Yeah. Shout out to somebody's cat.
Shout out to the podcast.
But yeah, you're right. It's definitely difficult. You can't just pump out a game every 2 or 3 years now.
I will.
But you can release DLCs and expansions every 2 or 3
years,
which we do see. You know, and I think
Destiny.
Destiny, exactly. That's a perfect example. Division as well, right? Live service games, you know.
I will interject on something that is kind of an in-betweener. It kind of it guides towards what Brian is saying about production time taking longer. Yes, and I will agree.
Oh, yeah,
a game like The Last of Us is a flagship franchise, and it's only 2 games with a 7 year when 7 years in between.
Yo, but Carlos, how many releases have we gotten though? Let's be real now.
Well, we gotten some bullshit releases.
But my point is, we've gotten several releases. Let's go for 10 years, right? We had the first game. We had the first game remastered. We had a DLC for the first game. Then we had the second game. Then we have the first game remade. So that's 5 games in 10 years.
Got a damn show.
So, yeah, there you go. It's constantly being put in your face, you know?
Even if it is 90% the same game.
It's like the same game. Yeah, exactly. But it's still new shit. Again, Skyrim, that's another one. That thing's been remade to high hell 50 million times, you know? So, yeah, it's all about being in the public zeitgeist like that, you know? All right.
When was the last Elder Scrolls game?
The Skyrim was 2000. Yeah. Let's go back. The online game, when did that come out? That was the last one. Was
it 2014? I'm talking about just in general, like single player Elder Scrolls
game. Skyrim, that was the last one.
2011.
2011, yeah.
Yeah. God. I mean, but then in their defense, what reason do they have to make a new one? Because if people keep buying Skyrim, then they just keep making it out.
Hey, Brian, doesn't that remind you of another franchise?
GTA is one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if they don't need to make another one. Releasing them, and this is why I got on Tony, back in the PS4 days, keep buying all those remaster games. It's stop buying them.
Yeah.
They're not going to give us new stuff. You keep buying the old stuff, Tony.
This is true. That's why I stopped, you know? Mm-hmm. It's stupid. It's getting dumb now, you know?
When you become a flagship franchise, you get to do stupid shit like what they're doing with GTA.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. Good stuff. Good conversation there. All right. Jay Shep. Here's another one from him. After layoffs, multiple former Microsoft/Xbox employees have complained about the lack of freedom and creativity when making Xbox games. We've seen this trend recently in the industry. However, Xbox has had this problem for what seems like a decade. Does the streaming philosophy of Xbox Game Pass prevent Xbox developers from making good games? Ooh. Ooh, contentious question there.
As far as freedom of development, to be honest, I think it depends on the studio. I don't think they're sitting on the guys who are sitting on the backs of the guys who made Cuphead or sitting on the backs of any of those other studios. I think when it comes to their flagships, they're a little bit more hands-on. Or what, any of their direct first copies. What is it? The Dragon game?
Like a Dragon?
No. The Dragon game that got canned.
Scalebound.
Yeah, Scalebound. That one, I think, is a first-party game, and I think they were just very critical about it, you know?
Yeah. So what do you guys think?
Like Manny said, it's a case-by-case basis. If you're saying, like let's say they acquire Activision and they said, oh, well, we're going to do a the next Call of Duty is going to be streamed. It's like, oh, well, I don't see why they can't make that a decent experience. I think a lot of this is just, you know, is being beamed down on Xbox because they haven't been able to produce, you know, a consistent amount of quality titles. And I don't think Game Pass has anything to do with this. I think it's more on just Xbox on, you know, starts from the top up, you know, Phil Spencer and the way that he manages all of his first party studios. I think that's more to blame than, you know, the fact that they have this service where, you know, all of their first party games are supposed to come up on it and stream.
Yeah. Brett, you have any thoughts on this?
I think that, man, I get that it's kind of cool to like throw dirt at Microsoft, and I get that they haven't done anything not to kind of have that done. I think we need to see the first batch of, you know, because we've seen Microsoft, you know, they gotta have something. There we go. Goes back to that. We have to see the first batch of games that Microsoft releases. You know, we can't say they've been a failure. They haven't released a lot yet. You know, we haven't seen what they've been working on. So can't tell you whether it's good, bad, or somewhere in between, man. Once they start dropping, then we'll know. But here's the problem. We're not even gonna, like you said, it's gonna be 5, 7, 10 years sometimes between games. So how are we even going to know what the rate that Microsoft is working right now? How do we even know how quickly these studios are working? Sure, we get something. How do we know if we're going to get something every 2 years, every 5 years, every 7 years? At this point, we just don't fucking know. The Microsoft playbook has kind of been thrown out the window. We've seen them adjusting the infrastructure. We just haven't seen anything from it yet. So,
well, I mean, fair, until then, we've already waited 5 years.
What's that?
We've already waited 5 years for some of these titles. You know, the Ninja Theory game, what's it called, Senua's Sacrifice or Saga, like we're still waiting on that. You know, we've gotten Halo, Gears, and Forza consistently, but the other what's the Obsidian, we're still waiting on that title. Fable was announced like 2 years ago, so, you know, I don't really like, with Microsoft, it's hard for me to even predict how their lineup's gonna come through, and because you just don't know what, you know, if is the initiative actually working on something, or, you know, you guys announced something pretty early on. You know, what's up with 343? Are they still like, can we still rely on them? Coalition, what are they doing?
Yeah,
a lot of it is still pretty ambiguous.
Oh shit. Hey Brad, got a question for you, man.
Oh snap, what's up?
From Blitz to Make It, he goes, how many years will Brett keep defending Xbox? Surely Xbox fans are sick of waiting.
Until Sony quits treating me like shit.
Damn, I knew you were going to have to bring Sony into this.
I mean, it's right at this point, it's a binary option, man. What, am I going to go play Nintendo games?
Yeah, he goes, they fucked up their biggest franchise, so why do you keep defending, giving them a pass?
I mean, mainly because Bethesda is my favorite studio, and they acquired Bethesda, so by default, that's where my loyalty lies. In terms of, like, if I had to choose one studio that, like, oh shit, that's, those guys are my jam, like almost any of the main Bethesda games for me are system sellers. They're decade long games, and I know it's the same for a lot of people. So, you know, I'm kind of where Starfield is, but I'm kind of defending them because my choices right now are Sony, and Sony's just me in particular. I just have real bad luck, but I've had really bad experiences with Sony. And on the other side, so you basically have, like, behind door number one, a well-known dick. Behind door number two, question mark. Well, I guess I'm going question mark.
He says, what about PC?
Oh, I love Steam. That's why I'm Steam Deck all the way. If I have to choose something, but I'm not like a fucking, I don't really have a great PC right now. And they're so fucking expensive. I just don't have the money to invest in one. I'm saving up for one, but, even then, when I get there, I won't be like PC master race, because I do enjoy consoles. What I'm really enjoying, actually, sitting, like, right now, my Steam Deck is hooked up to a keyboard and a mouse, and it's kind of broadcasting via the Wi-Fi onto my Samsung 75-inch. So I'm just kind of like kicking back in my recliner playing RimWorld. That's honestly my probably preferred way to game at this point.
Nice. Blitzo says you continue to tell people to ask better of Sony, yet Xbox is different? Question mark.
I haven't seen anything. Like, where has, like, I guess you're talking about Halo. And quite frankly, I don't give a shit about Halo, and I haven't for a while. Yeah. But other than that, like, I don't see where.
I don't know. Your reasoning to me sounds on point. You like Bethesda. Microsoft has Xbox has Bethesda. Therefore, you like Xbox. It seems pretty simple to me.
Well, it's also my experience. Like, when I called and had a problem with my game just straight up not working, Sony gave me the runaround, told me I had to call the publisher. I told them they were the publisher. Then they told me I had to call the developer. I told them that they're the developer. It was a developed in-house game. And then they told me that broken items only receive refunds if there's been a company-wide policy put in place to establish refunds for said items that were broken. It doesn't matter if the thing wasn't working and I could prove it. They didn't give a shit and basically told me to fuck off and then hung up on me. On the other hand, I had a problem with my soundbar, cutting the sound in and out. Called Microsoft because I thought it was my Xbox because I was having issues as it was switching into game mode and it would switch input channels, it would go dead. So what I knew is my Xbox, every time I turned it on, my sound started getting fucked up. So because it was kicking in this game mode. So I called Microsoft and I'm like, look, man, I'm pretty sure it's my Xbox. They sat on the phone with me for like 2 hours troubleshooting diagnostics. And then not only when we figured out it was the soundbar, they called me back the next day to see if I had any other questions, to see how my call with the other people went, and to see if there's anything else that they could do. Just like a quality, like the day after, like, hey man, everything okay? Well, let us know. And they got on the line with the TV manufacturer to make sure all the inputs and settings were correct for optimal audio. Like, these motherfuckers went out of their way to try and give me a good experience. And I'm one of those people, man. And maybe it's just because I've been technically a small business for 20 years, but how you treat me matters. It really fucking does. Maybe I just take shit too personal, but I don't like it when somebody says, I don't give a shit. I'm too good for you. You'll come here anyway. I mean, goddamn, if they're right, if I want to play some fucking God of War, but I don't have to like it, man.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, your reasoning seems fair, you know?
It's what it is, you know? Yeah.
All right, but, but we are here to answer the tough questions. Go ahead, Carlos, and then I'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, customer service is not something that I base my opinion on stuff, but...
I expect everybody to treat me like shit, so...
it's not customer service, it's customer experience.
Yeah, everything. Right? You know, like, I get it. You like, know, to you, that's a big deal.
I've been treated better customer service. I'm enjoying the Game Pass. I play a lot more video games than I did before I got into Game Pass, and I... thus have more fun. Like, there aren't any big blockbuster titles, no, but even things like there's several games that are coming out, they're 60-70 bucks a pop. Now I'm not gonna have to play like Atomic Rose. I'm not gonna have to pay for that shit.
Yeah, and you also really get a lot of use from Game Pass as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good value, it's a good experience, they've treated me well. The only thing that they don't have is big exclusive blockbuster titles. I mean, really thinking it through, that's the only place that they're lacking. It's not like my PlayStation does better. It crashes and has glitchier games most of the time. Like, so if I'm basing my opinion entirely around exclusives, sure, I would go PlayStation, except for, as we have addressed before, Bethesda is who I care about exclusives from. And guess who they're releasing on now? So, yeah, I think that's matching up pretty well.
What's that? On PlayStation.
Bethesda's Deathloop. Releasing on PlayStation?
Deathloop.
Deathloop's
on Xbox, don't worry about
it. Is
that
now, it is now, all but good. You know that the, you know, but new Xbox, you know, new Bethesda games have for this generation have come out of PlayStation so far. By the way, real quick, Logic Wins goes, I won't speak for Brett, but the appeal that Xbox has for me is the value being offered, customer service, play anywhere, FPS boost, free cross games, auto HDR, Microsoft rewards. And he also says, I agree with Brett. Xbox does everything better than PlayStation except for first party. So there you go. Good stuff, man. Let's move on here. What is this, man? We're ready to get in some sponsored questions, man. This one is from a handsome fella named Romudeath. You may or may not know him on Twitter. Getting heat from the fanboys, both sides. He's sponsoring Mob Hits, a couple of Mob Hits questions. Why does Xbox look like a dumpster fire right now? Is it normal for a company like this to have so much negative news on every front? It seems like Xbox has been trying to get itself straight, but ends up falling behind. Can we look at Phil Spencer as the root of the problem if things don't get better by the end of the year? It's a good question, man. You know, I think Phil Spencer is doing a good job of trying to get things back together, but I'm wondering if the damage that Don Matrick did has been so deep that it's just impossible. And at the end of the day, yes, Phil Spencer is the guy in charge, so ultimately the buck stops with him, you know. And I know there's other factors too, like the pandemic and all that, but then other studios have also released games during a pandemic, so yeah, things are not looking good right now, you know.
They've got a lot of goodwill to buy back. I mean, a lot of people had bad experience in the whole TV thing. That shit still fucking haunts them. As it stands, they haven't necessarily earned the benefit of the doubt for a lot of people. And that's what it's an uphill journey, man. Unless you show them otherwise, you're just going to continue getting crap shoveled on you.
Well, Brett, remember you asked this question a couple weeks ago. You know, can Xbox ever, I guess, save face with fans? You know, it's going
to
be tough.
I mean, it's possible, but you're going to have to play. It's like when somebody has an opinion different than yours. Not only are you going to have to just express a good argument, man, but you're going to have to make that shit airtight. You're not going to change a goddamn thing. Yeah. And they're really going to have to perform, and not just, you know, once, twice, but three, four times, you know, reliably before people even start to kind of calm down. Even then, like, the best we would ever get back to would be a full fanboy war, 50-50. But like that's still a ways off, and I don't even know if it's possible until some games start releasing, man.
Yeah, I think the one big thing about Microsoft and, you know, Xbox is it doesn't have an identity anymore. It's old identity, all, you know, where, you know, the kind of balls to the walls getting, you know, for the gamers, yeah, that type of thing, that doesn't fly right now. And also the other fact is that their cornerstone franchises that literally push that sort of you know, energy are gone. Like, yeah. Gears of War doesn't know what it, to be honest, it doesn't know what it is anymore. It's not what it was, and the same thing with Halo. Doesn't know what it is, so it's trying to be like everything else that's on the market. Right? Like, you look at, like, what Halo Infinite is. Halo Infinite doesn't even have its own, you know, like, Halo doesn't...
Yeah, it doesn't have an identity.
It doesn't have an identity, and I think that's what the biggest thing about Microsoft is right now. What is your identity? Because I think a lot of it is just trying... I think a lot of right now is them trying to attempt to find it. When you look at Xbox, what do you think of now? And think of something that is not, like, over 20 years old, you know?
You know what's crazy? Microsoft has a press conference in 3 days.
Got a question about that?
Oh, do we? Oh, then I'll talk about it then.
All right. Okay. You guys have anything more to say about this before we get to the next question, which is about that conference? Let's get to it. All right. Next question, also from Mob Hits, also sponsored by Romudeath. Even though we already know what will be shown at this week's Xbox Showcase, is there a chance these titles will blow us away, or have we seen it all already? First of all, do we know what's going to be shown at this thing?
Yeah, it's four games from four studios. I think Minecraft Legends is one of them. Redfall is the other one, and then there's two more.
Oh, okay, here we go. The Elder Scrolls Online, Forza Motorsport, Minecraft Legends, and Redfall. Yeah, that's a skip.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention earlier. I was like, so Microsoft announces a press conference, right? And it's like, oh,
yeah, at least one of them's a Bethesda game, or two of them are Bethesda games. Ain't that something, Carlos?
What is it, Redfall and Elder Scrolls Online?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, I was a little bit excited. I was like, hey, you know, might get a Starfield release date and everything. But and then, you know, real quick, they said, oh, Starfield isn't going to be on this because it needs its own show. But then you know, time went on, and then I saw a tweet from Aaron Greenberg, and we talked about this in the chat. He's like, he's doing the classic temper expectations tweet from the conference, and yeah. I'm like, man, so you know, that's how you know, like, you don't have fucking fire to play with. Like, it's like, if you know you have some good shit in your conference, then you know that people will be hyped. But instead, it's like, you know, It's like, hey, you know, this is just going to be these games, all right? And then I think your homeboy Paris also did the same thing. He's like, hey, guys, just, you know, don't forget. Don't, you know, this is what they're going to do.
Hey, guys, temper your expectations.
The thing is, saying that isn't, like, I understand why people want to say that, because for every single, like, conference that gets announced, fanboys lose their shit. Oh, my God. They think the greatest things are going to happen. And then, obviously, when they don't happen, people get pissed off. So, I understand why you do that. Look at the Nintendo fanboys, for example, right? Nintendo will flat out go, hey, this Direct is only going to be about Fire Emblem. Motherfuckers back, where's Legend of Zelda? You know?
Yeah, where's Super Smash Brothers? Where's the Goku announcement?
Yeah, so, yeah.
But you know, Nintendo is also the type of company that shows a Smash Bros. Character and people fucking lose their minds.
Yeah, they start fainting in stores and shit, pissing on themselves.
Because Nintendo knows what their fans love, and it's stupid shit like that.
Yeah.
And with Microsoft, like, I wish they kind of went in with more confidence, like, hey, you know, these are some great games that we're going to show. But it says, like, hey, guys, you know, we're only going to show these games. Don't.
Yeah, because you know what's going to happen. If they didn't say that, people are like, where's Starfield? Where's Fable? Where's Senua's with Sacrifice? Like, you know that's going to happen. I mean, they're going to say
that. Oh, they're going to say regardless. Yeah.
They're going to say that regardless, you know?
But the thing about it is, like, I guess, like, I don't understand what all the hype is for these. For this, anyways, if you're gonna be showing Minecraft, which again it is one of their most popular games, but the fan base of Minecraft is not going to be watching this shit. They're too busy watching video, like YouTube videos about how to make an effective building. They're not watching these sorts of things. So it's like, who is this for?
No,
you know,
right.
Like, yeah. Forza fans, like, the Forza fans are just chomping at the bit. Oh, need four. No, they're not. They're probably just going to be like, all right, cool. You know, it's an odd thing to sort of have these sort of, I would call these sort of mini tons as far as a show. Like, why even put this? Why even, like, promote this the way that they're promoting this? Like the world is going to end because of this shit. Right.
Remember what Twitch called the micro tons? Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Brian, go ahead.
Are they promoting it like that? Because again, as far as I see, it's just them saying, like, hey, we have some games to show you and we'll show you them.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. They haven't been promoting it like that. It's the fanboys going crazy, obviously.
I think the other thing is that, like, we haven't heard anything from Microsoft and we literally just get this meh.
Yeah.
Like, Microsoft had totally not done anything at the end of the year. They didn't show anything. They were at the Game Awards. Phil was there. There's proof. He was sitting in the audience. And they didn't have a damn thing to show after literally dropping the mic for the reveal of the Xbox Series X with all the games that they showed.
Yeah.
Okay, Manny, so let me ask you this. Like, what do you want them to do? Because I'm hearing that everyone...
I want them to show something. I want them to show...
This is them showing something.
Manny, let me finish his question.
Like, this is them showing something. I mean, like, people, like, complain about the whole, like, wait for E3 thing where people are like, oh, yeah, you can't just have, like, everything is at E3. And then they're trying to actually, okay, let's do something else and have, like, smaller things throughout the year. And then people are like, oh, yeah, you need to show something that we care about. It's like, you can't have both, really. I mean, like, if Microsoft is a platform that has, like, stupid amounts of different games for different people, some of these conferences won't show you what you want. And I think that's fine. No? Or am I missing something here?
I think it's fine to show conferences, but I feel like, at the same time, does this even need to be a conference? Couldn't they just all have their own little who's and what's it's and why are we taking time out of our day to watch this? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do the go down this road of, like, hey, we're going to show you blah, 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 and do a little in-depth yada, yada on this, then don't even do a conference. Just pop out a video for each one of those things and call it a day. Doesn't even need to be a live event or any of that other silliness. If you're going to do a live event, if you're going to do some, like, this, some sort of premiere, you have to show something.
Gotta have something.
You gotta show something. You gotta show, like... Or otherwise, why are we here? You know what I mean?
Okay. Maybe I just understood the whole thing, but wrong. But I see it as just it's some pre-recorded videos of developers just talking about their games and showing some gameplay, and that's it. nothing too major, but at the same time,
in the Sony camp, you know what this would be? These would be a blog entry. That's what these things are. That's the level of this stuff.
Okay, fair enough. Again, to me, this is something that I would like more of, because I feel like with most games these days, it's just kind of pre-rendered nothing burgers on screen for like an hour and a half at the conference. So I'd actually like people to actually talk about their games and tell us what's actually happening in them. So to me, I do prefer this type of format better than most other things, because most other things are just like glorified sizzle reels, and they'll stand on stage and just vomit marketing terms at you for like 5 minutes and then show you the trailer. So if they don't do that, then I'm fine with it. Like, I need more people talking about what the games actually are. Like, granted, yeah, it could just be on YouTube and whatnot, but then what's to say that it's not just a bunch of YouTube videos that they thought, hey, rather than put them out at different times, just put them all like together and say, hey, we have a thing to show you, and here it is.
I'm actually in the middle here. Like, I understand where Manny's coming from. Me personally, I like the big games, but I'm also not against updates like this, you know, like a 20-minute thing or something, just to have something to show. So I prefer the big Mama Jamma shows or whatever, but if you want to give me some little things here and there, you know, sure, why not?
But I say, like, I don't think that, like, the first thing that we should see this year is essentially for a bunch of stuff that we already knew was coming. You know, if anything, throw something out big on top of that, just to get you along to go. But it just seems like it's like, you know, we got all these side quest games over here, even though Minecraft is a big thing. But I just don't think that, like, the first thing that we should be seeing from Microsoft is essentially a bunch of stuff that would probably end up on a blog on some site, or, you know, or a thing that they just put out on their website. You know what I mean?
I'm kind of in the middle as well. Obviously, just standalone having these types of events, I don't have an issue with, but I will have to admit that the optics of it is kind of weird, because like Manny mentioned, Microsoft was pretty absent after they announced the delay of Starfield, and then, you know, they have a lot of stuff cooking in the kitchen, and, you know, some of the stuff that was said, like, they were absent in the Game Awards, they were absent at the end of the year and didn't say a word, and a lot of the stuff that was said to defend them were like, oh, because of the FTC thing, and it's like they don't want to, you know, show their cards and have, you know, some bullshit with the FTC or the EU
bullshit
and that stuff. And then now they announced a show. It's like, oh shit, they actually do have something. But it's, you know, especially with their biggest title that everyone is excited for.
This is like something they would do, like, you know, a little bit after. Like, you start off big, and then what you do is you throw up, you know, the other stuff. Like, and we got more. And that's when you throw this thing in here. But I think to essentially have the first thing that anybody ever sees from Microsoft this year, just to be like, it's those games. Yeah, we got stuff. It's not a full on decision. It's just like, you know, well, we got some stuff. Let's just roll them out. Yeah, you can see what they look. Oh, you can come along and see what we got.
And I understand Brian's sentiment, where it's like, you know, having a developer, you know, show the game and talk about the game can be a lot better for us than instead of sizzle reels. But I will say this: I don't know if I want to see a developer play Minecraft and Elder Scrolls Online for a substantial amount of time.
But like Elder Scrolls Online, like, is it like, you know, again, we got to wait and see. But I mean, what else can you talk about it? Oh, we got a new update. They have a lot of updates. unless they're doing some overhaul on the whole thing and literally throwing ray tracing and all that other shit, to, like, give you a little taste of what Elder Scrolls 7 is going to be. I don't know.
Now, if it was Starfield, excuse me?
Mm-hmm. But they already had that ace pulled out of their set. So now it's like, what do you got?
Yo, Ty, save me here. Feels like Todd, give me something, man. He's like, I'll give you Elder Scrolls Online update.
The what they could do, and if they really wanted to do, they could just be like, and stay tuned to the end for a really special announcement. What's that announcement? Then you watch it and it's
Banjo-Kazooie's
like,
back, baby.
Banjo-Kazooie's back. Oh, shit.
All right, man, let's move on.
Rare's not making avatars anymore.
All right, we got some more sponsor questions. E-Man, I know that name. Very talented fellow.
Oh.
So he is sponsoring a couple of J-Shep's questions. So the first one is, given the state of the gaming industry during this recession, would it be beneficial for developers to unionize? Could it help in any way? Manny, for no particular reason, what do you say?
I feel like the thing about it is unionization is a seriously hard thing to do, especially when the gears are already in motion. Like, this would involve the whole industry having to agree to do this. And to be honest, they'd much rather outsource than they would do any of that sort of stuff. It's disappointing as fuck. But there's a lot of the industry that really needs to unionize and really have a set part of precedence for the way they treat their employees and stuff like that. But the game industry is not going to do it.
No,
just because of the way they can hire somebody for shitty cheap money, you know.
Yeah, and they don't even have to go outside the country for that, you know.
Yeah, you could do a lot of some people in the animation industry were doing, you know, because in New York City and everywhere outside of out of California, the animators union has absolutely no power. So you'll have a lot of non-union shows with a bunch of people getting paid really shitty money. There was a studio up in New York that was called, I can't remember the name of it, I think it was called Little Airplane, right? And their model was to essentially run their shows 90% with interns.
Wow.
And to just have key people on top, just sort of, you know, putting stuff. So you know what? A whole set, you know, they get rid of everybody. You know, because the school year's over, and then they get some new people in, and then it was just to say, oh, hey, you know, you're getting experience, but they really weren't getting paid any money. In fact, for a lot of cases, if you're working as an intern, you're paying the school for the privilege to intern at some place. So
that's wild.
It's a difficult one. I would say I would think it would be great, especially for video games, the art and the effects industry. But you see how it is. They literally work everybody to the bone, at least for a lot of studios, and then they just replace them with a new fresh model. So
yeah, and also the gaming industry isn't like, you know, as unified as some people will say, you know.
No,
like,
it's
or
not.
they think it's just this big conglomerate of all the companies. No, it doesn't work like that. It's a lot of different pieces and stuff. You're not going to get all those different people, all these different companies to agree on something like that.
The trickle down would be because, like, I could see maybe smaller studios trying to union, but there is no specific union because, again, multiple people have to establish a union in order for it to establish the rules for the union. And then register. But like, I would say, like, yeah, maybe a few smaller studios might have it. Like, I think Double Fine has a unionized thing. I think they do. I don't know. But again, I don't think the rest of the industry is going to unionize, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, yeah. Anytime any of these companies can unionize, like, a lot of the corporation, what they'll do is, like what Manny mentioned, we'll just get contractors. We'll just get, you know, we'll get people from India to do it. We'll get AI, whatever they can to not lose any sort of leverage against their workers. They'll do it. They're fucking ruthless, man.
That's what happened. Another thing for the animators union. That's why we got a lot of stuff that was animated in Japan, like G.I. Joe and Transformers and stuff like that, because it was a big there was a strike at the time in the 80s or like the 80s and the set, like, so the 70s or something. It was a big old strike then, and they didn't want to, the industry did, you know, the big studios didn't want to negotiate. They said, fuck you, we're going to China, to go to Japan where they're cheaper over there. And you know, whatever, you guys. So a lot of people ended up losing their jobs and stuff like that. And this is like stuff like the guys who made He-Man, you know, Filmation and a bunch of other well-known animation studios, Hanna-Barbera and stuff like that. Again, not the foremost of animation studios, but they just thought it was more effective to just hire a bunch of people in Asia to just undercut these people instead of coming to the table. So now what's to say that isn't going to happen here? Why you can literally you can hire people out in China, you can hire people out in Korea or even in India who are as talented as the people over here, but you can literally pay them pennies.
Yeah, you're gonna do that, you know,
and it's not like some of these bigger studios don't have entities out in other countries, you know, countries that are helping to develop these games. I mean, I think Ubisoft has an India branch. Don't quote me on this, but
I believe so. Yeah,
they have an India branch. So what's that India branch doing? They're just they're a workhorse house. What are they doing? They're probably not making the full game, but that doesn't mean that they're not doing all the environments, those elaborate, Assassin's Creed environments and stuff like that, and just essentially leaving the main studio to concentrate on, you know, the bigger stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. Got another sponsored question here, also from Jay Shep. If I'm not mistaken, Sony mentioned a demo type system for the new PS Plus. Is that in place yet, and is it worth it? That's a good question, because I honestly have no freaking idea.
They had what was it, paid demos?
Yeah, remember, which is, as you rightfully said, this was an old idea that they abandoned.
It was an old idea. Well, the only one that I know of that is on the forefront, because again, this is... was on there, was I know Death Stranding and I think Horizon Zero Dawn was on it, where you could get those games. As I remember, the clock started as soon as you downloaded it, so you didn't get the full amount of time. But hasn't been any other games that have sat in that free game trials. Oh, excuse me, not free game trials. What do they call it? I don't know. It's part of the higher tier. It's the same old shit that they had from like OG PlayStation Plus when they didn't even want to give away free games, which by the way, our podcast has been around for that long where we talked about this.
So they're charging for demos now?
Well, the thing about it is it's a weird thing because it is the full game. It's just got some extra programming on top of it that essentially cuts it off at a certain amount of time. So as soon as you could play that game trial. And then if it stops, you still have your save data from it. And then you can continue if you decide to buy the game.
Yo, is the Order 1886 on that bitch?
Order 1886 ain't on nothing.
might be able to beat that game.
Gravity Rush 2 just had its 6-year anniversary. Sony ain't doing shit about that one. One's just sitting there.
you know how they treat their Japanese games.
They didn't say nothing about it because Japan Studio is gone. But yeah, I think maybe they might be releasing something, but I have not seen anything that sits on the forefront. To be honest, it's kind of a dumb idea.
Demos. Check this out. Demos are in nature supposed to entice. They're like free samples. They're supposed to
exactly. Why are you charging for a thing that's gonna? You're already paying for the damn thing, and then on top of it, you're like, "Hey, look, I can play a game trial." No, yeah. Just release like, the trial. Just
I'm so like,
that you, it gets if, the if, sale.
If you're a huge fan of trying out games, and just get Game Pass,
By the way, does anybody in the chat have any of the higher tiers of PlayStation Plus? Because, again, I can't answer this question because I didn't bother upping it because I didn't see the point, I'm not going to be paying for old games. That's the same reason I stopped subscribing to Xbox Game Pass. I played all this shit, and I don't care about indie games. So what the fuck's the point, So, yeah, if anybody could let me know, please, because I honestly don't know.
The thing about it is, their whole – we said this before. Sony's – who's them or what's it, whatever the hell, the versus Game Pass dealy is not anything worth anything, to be honest. Hey, look, you can play PlayStation 2 PlayStation 3 games on probably the worst state you could possibly play it, not only running off of an old PlayStation somewhere in the cloud, but also running through streaming.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing with you know, trying demos for PlayStation games on, for a lot of the PlayStation audience, it's like, you don't need to sell us on first party PlayStation games, because I feel like most of the people already are going to get those games. So like for demos, it's like probably just third party. And Jay Shep mentioned games ain't coming to Game Pass. So I'm like, the third parties are.
Not first party. That's the problem, you know?
So, yeah. You know, it's a great game. I feel like Game Pass is a great place to demo third party games for sure. Yeah. But, you know, the bread and butter for Sony is Sony first party games. And, you know, a lot of those games are pretty much day ones for the fan base.
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't need a demo to want to buy those. And I feel like hardcore Sony fans are the ones that are going to be subscribing to the highest tiers anyways. So
yeah, to play their Rogue Galaxies in there.
Go ahead, Brian.
I think that's proof that Tony's not a hardcore Sony fan. He didn't sub to the high tiers.
That is very true, you know. Well, again, the PlayStation community hates me this generation, Brian, so that's already been debunked, you know.
The other thing about it is that even when PlayStation Plus initially showed up, Tony did not invest in it. When they started running, like, you know, free, you know, like, well, you call them free games, but started offering full-on games on that, that's when everybody jumped on board that shit. So they need to do something.
Jay Shep, he's like, he's not a pony.
He's not a pony. No, the thing about it is, it's like, you get, like, again, like, it's, I feel like a lot of times with Sony, it's them not reading the room properly. They're sitting so high up on their little high horses, looking down, thinking that they know what's going on when they really don't. Like, they know what needs to be done, and the only way to do it is the, you know, but again, like, I feel like the reason why that they're not, you know, again, they haven't fully jumped in the pool yet, they're still dipping their toes in there, is because Microsoft is not making serious bank off of Game Pass yet. They still haven't, you know, they're still, like, you know, they're still out there, like, the order's out. So if they don't make it, that's what, once, again, once
I think Game Pass is finally profitable for them. I think it's finally gotten that
point. I don't think it's at the point where Sony wants to.
Oh, no, it's not a breakout for sure, but I think it did cross that threshold. I think it is actually
profitable.
Profitable would be like it's making $1 more than you spend, you know?
Yeah, I think the thing about it is that when they start making some serious-ass gangbusters, that's when you see they'll start to react. This Activision shit, they're seriously afraid of that. They're seriously afraid of that because they started talking about it. You know what I mean? They put out they're gonna destroy the industry because that's when you know that they feel like they're gonna be really affected when they seriously make a real decision as to what they want, you know, about what they want to do. And I think that's it. Like, I think the Call of Duty, I think the numbers are telling. They make, because the Call of Duty, like, I would say, has a lot of the general audience's eye. And if they were to ever lose the general audience, which is not, this is not us gamers. This is, like, you know, the bro gamers that don't give a shit about anything except for Call of Duty and war games.
Call of Duty.
It's those guys. If you get the normie gamers, if you catch those normie gamers, that's where the money is. It's kind of like making kids movies, right? Kids movies make bank because you have the general audience, and you literally, usually when you go to the movies, you're usually bringing multiple kids into the theaters multiple times. So that's like the same thing. You catch that general audience, you'll be making some serious money.
Yeah. Real quick, because I had to look this up. So this is from The Verge. Spencer says he now, this is from October last year, by the way. This is what Phil Spencer says. Game Pass as an overall part of our content and services revenue is probably 15%. I don't think it gets bigger than that. And I think the overall revenue grows. So 15% of a bigger number, but we don't have this future where I think 50 to 70% of our revenue comes from subscriptions. So they said at 15%, they're actually profitable, but they don't expect it to get any bigger than that. So Xbox is still making most of its money from, you know, consoles and physical game sales, or just, or game sales in general, not subscriptions, because
digital transactions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be physical, but yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, pretty interesting. Moving on. Oh yeah, by the way, hold on. The god himself, Fergus Mills, was in here. He had a comment. Oh,
shout out to Fergus Mills, man.
Yes, he is subscribed to the highest tier of PlayStation Plus. He goes, game trials allow you to download the full game and play, but it's locks after a few hours. Some notable games are The Last of Us, Cyberpunk, and Gotham Knights. All right, cool. There we go.
Gotham Knights. So,
it is a notable game, but you know, maybe not for the reasons.
Yeah, no, I'm saying like. Yeah. I guess if you really wanted to play that garbage, there you go. Yeah. Well, isn't it on Game Pass as well?
I'm not sure. If anybody can answer that, let me know. I would know because I don't have Game Pass, which is something, ironically enough, the ponies were mad at me about. Go figure.
They're like, yo, Tony, why aren't you about that life?
Yeah. Man, you a Wait, fake gamer.
They were mad at you because you didn't have Game Pass?
Yeah. Remember that whole hoopla with me and Game Pass? The people who gave me the most shit wasn't Xbox guys. It was PlayStation guys.
Oh.
Ain't that something?
Well, you know, they got to complain about something,
yeah.
I guess.
Oh, yeah, he's for the FTC. He's hiding, you know? This fucking Kotaku had to write about me. That's piss. I'm still mad about that, you know? Two dudes said they were unsubscribing from Game Pass. Suddenly, oh, my God, what's this big wave? Me and Gene Park, by the way. Shout out to Gene Park, man. All right, moving on here. We got a question from Eurocar9.
Wait, is there other Euro cars?
There might be eight. Yeah,
but a family of Euro cars.
So we answered his other question. So we'll go over this one. Will the success of The Last of Us TV show help or hurt the gaming franchise? It's a good question.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer
It definitely gets it. It definitely is in the zeitgeist. But to be honest, I don't know. If it will affect the franchise, well, I don't know if it'll affect the franchise too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it'll definitely, if there was a game that was actually out that came out right on the same time, and I don't mean just Last of Us 1.
I was about to say, man, you forgot about something. You know,
I don't remember. I don't think Last of Us Remastered is going to do anything to jump the bar, but. Yeah, I don't. I definitely think that they would. If it does badly, it would affect the franchise. But I don't think it would affect it that much. Look at Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet and Clank had a lousy ass movie, but that game did fucking gangbusters. Yeah. The one that was based off of it. So I don't know. I don't know if it'll really affect it. You know, either way, if it goes either way, as long as the games are making money.
Yeah, the main thing I thought of, you know, with this question. But it depends on how good the show is, right? Because one of my fears is that the game, whatever games come out, start dictating the direction that the games go. And you know where we saw this already, right? Marvel, right? Marvel comics changed when the MCU started blowing up, right? Iron Man is not the same guy I read when I was growing up. It's Robert Downey Jr. Now every character, every comic has like those quippy dialogue, just like you know the movies does. So that's one thing that could happen. The success of the show could make the developers go, okay, let's change it to be more like a show. But so far, we're only two episodes in. The show is true to the source material. So if they stay on that course, we shouldn't have a problem. But I wouldn't be surprised if a character that's exclusive to the show makes it into the game, or the third game, I guess, in this point. But then again, we would know that because maybe they were planned. It's very hard to say because, again, I've said this. By the time we get to the third season, we're already going to be going off on a different track because that third game is not going to be out at that point. You know?
Yeah, and then the other thing is that Neil Druckmann is also part of the team that's creating. Yeah,
so that makes it a little weird too. So it's like any changes that happen to the show, if they come to the game, he has to sign off on it. So was it the producers that made that decision, or was it Neil Druckmann? So it's a little
To be honest, also The Last of Us is directly produced by Sony, isn't it?
I believe
it's
so.
Part of their film division, right?
Yeah, so it's a little bit trickier. This kind of and I can't compare the two, but for example, the writers of The Expanse also write for the TV show, right? So I wonder, did they change anything in their novels after doing it on the TV show? I don't know the answer, but I'm curious about that because it's the same situation, right? The original guys who made the thing making another version of it, right? Which is what Neil Druckmann is doing, you know? So I don't know. It's an interesting one. So I'm going to guess because he's on board, the show is probably not going to go in a wildly different direction than the games, at least tonally, you know? But yeah, go ahead.
We talked about the nihilism in the second game. I mean,
that's going to stay, you know?
Well, will it? Because TV shows aren't, I don't think I've ever seen a TV show that a mainstream TV show that is as nihilistic as The Last of Us 2 is. So
yeah, that's true. Even the last, you know, The Walking Dead is, you know, it got some fucked up shit, you're right, but it didn't reach those levels. But it got close though, you know.
Yeah. So
and certain Game of Thrones seasons got that fucking close too, you know.
Yeah.
I think they'll preserve that. I think this show may set a new benchmark for nihilism. You know.
They could be. So, you know, it just depends on how, because you're right, Neil Druckmann
apparently directed episode, the one that aired tonight. Thank you, Bliss, for telling us that. So there you go. So it's like the show and the T and the game are like linked, you know?
Because, I mean, the first two games, I'm pretty sure he didn't write it in mind with a TV show in mind, especially the first one.
But you're right, the third game will be written with a TV show in mind. That's something that's going to change for sure, you know?
So I don't know. I don't know if that's a good...
I wonder if Kojima's kicking himself. He's like, that motherfucker, Neil Druckmann, directing a show, a movie before me, the master of cinema and video games?
he's having press conferences with A-list actors?
Oh, how dare he? He's got my actor,
Pedro?
Troy Baker?
By the way, thank you guys for not doing a Japanese accent because we don't want to get in trouble. Thank you for that.
No, I didn't mean to be in
that. No, but you're right. Yeah, Kojima must be like, what the fuck, man?
Like, what the fuck? I'm the master of cinema.
Yeah. I'm 80% film.
You know.
Last of Us, the only reason why you even doing this shit is because Kojima did it first.
Well, the first two episodes of this show have been gotten high praise. If it remains consistent till the end of the season, this show is going to get nominated for a lot of awards, Emmys, Golden Globes. So Neil Druckmann's going to be attending all these shows, and Kojima's going to be like, motherfucker,
getting an Emmy
before me,
you know, Kojima.
Yeah. I was thinking about this too. Like, do you think this was Neil Druckmann's plan? I'm being fucking super conspiratorial right now, right? You think this was his plan all along to get into Hollywood and shit?
You put Chris's tinfoil hat on?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just a thought. I'm just thinking out loud.
Like,
right
you
now.
Know what? I'm done with these video games. Hey, you know, I'm
yeah,
going to
you
do
know,
some
why
movies.
Am I talking like this?
I'm going to do some movies.
Oh, man. All right. Good stuff. Moving on here. Last two questions of the night from Mr. Tumeke himself. All right. Who's been joining us all night? So shout out to him. All right. First question here. What are your predictions for review scores of games that are releasing this year? If you know me, you know I don't play these games, man. By the way, I'm glad you asked the question because it leads me to ask another question. What, besides fanboyism, because it seems to me that's the only reason for this, what is the point of predicting review scores? Because you always see that before a big game comes out. Oh, what do we predict it's going to get? And I've never seen it done outside of the context of, let's fuel the fanboy wars.
Oh no, I've seen it outside of that. I feel like a lot of people.
What is it for? I'm asking a genuine question.
Yeah.
What is the point of regular people asking? Because again, I've never seen it asked outside of, what is this game gonna? This game's gonna be trash. It's gonna be, you know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah, enlighten me, please.
Well, I don't know. I don't know of the point, but the motivation behind it is just people trying to find, you know, trying to see. It's like, oh, can I predict where this game, just, you know, using my intuition of what, you know, what the material that's come out before it's came out, and, you know, where it's like, for example, we do predictions for Nintendo games. We know Breath of the Wild is going to be a 90+.
Yeah.
We know it's going to the sequel for Breath of the Wild. it's going to do a 90 plus. So it's like, you know, predicting stuff like that, it's like, you know, we're us trying to put our hats and be like, oh, we know all of these. We're constructing this formula in our mind and we can predict where the mass of the game reviewers are going to go. So, you know, when a game like let's say God of War comes out, the next God of War comes out, it's like, ah, we can, you know, us, I'm saying us here in the room, we can, you know, without putting, except for Adam, us putting our non-biased opinions on God of War alongside what would the standard game reviewer does, and we're like, ah, we can probably predict it's going to be somewhere on the 80s.
Yeah.
You know,
Toolmaker did say, you know, if you don't like review scores, you could just say, you know, we could just go with what games you think will be well received or not. So I'll answer it in that context. And again, I am saying this as a reviewer who uses review scores. I hate review scores. You know, I hate them because motherfuckers, they won't even bother reading my fucking review. It goes right to the score. Why'd you give it that? Read the fucking review, you piece of shit. It's right above you. I don't have to explain. I've literally had this happen to me so many times, you know. Why did you give it that? Did you not read? No, they obviously fucking didn't, you know. Fucking assholes.
A little frost in you, man.
Yo, man, it sounds like you're channeling Adam Susser or something here.
Yeah. but the difference is I'm not saying that about all gamers. Just the pieces of shit don't want to read the review, you know. Seriously, why are you going to ask me that? There's a full review right above you. Fucking slap the shit out of you, man.
I remember one time you were like, you just reposted the thing and they're like, yeah, man, I don't want to read that, all that.
Yeah, like just give me, you know, the guy said, just give me the cliff notes. Fuck you.
Give me the cliff notes. Know? Get your own fucking cliff notes.
Yeah. That's why I love when we were on SCFU and played no review scores. Motherfuckers had to read that shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What games do we think are going to get? You already know Spider-Man's going to get well received.
Spider-Man's going to get a lot of love.
Final Fantasy 16, that's going to be another one that's going to be well received.
Probably
Jedi Survivor is going to be an interesting one, right? Because I think reviewers will not like it, and the gamers are going to love it. Just like with the first game, because with the first game, it's another white guy as a protagonist, but the gamers loved it, you know. So those games are.
First one didn't get that hate.
No, from the fucking reviewers, it did. You know, places, the typical places, you know. Check the Metacritic, because I think regular reviewers, if you know what I mean, they like the game, but like the big places. Kind of didn't. Starfield, you already know.
And Jedi Fallen Order got a 79, so I don't know what that means.
That's kind of good. You know, remember what review scores are, right? 7. Actually, no. Anything below 7, absolute trash, right? 7, 8, it's okay. 9, pretty good. 10, greatest game of all time. That's literally how review scores work and why I hate them, you know? Yeah,
Breath of the Wild 2,
you already know what's going to happen, you know? I would perform a certain action on camera, but I'm not going to do that. But you already know what's going to be happening, you know, when that game drops. Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, is that coming out this year? Are they going to release 2 Final Fantasy games in 1 year? I don't know about that, man. You know?
Is there enough hype for us to left if there's 2 in 1 year?
Logic wins. What about Redfall? How's that game going to be received? Ooh, that's a good question because I don't know.
Redfall. Redfall can. I don't see it getting a 90. Like you know what I'm saying. Like I don't see Redfall getting a 90. But it
can. I don't know if it's going to be well received or not. I honestly don't know. Yeah, you know, review scores are opinions which shouldn't be taken as gospel. Exactly, man. I agree with that. I even said, like, don't take my fucking shit as gospel either, you know? By the way, I got to tell you a quick story. I must have said this on air before, but it's just funny, right? It just goes to show how much people pay attention to these dumb reviews and stuff, right? So I forgot. There was some thread going on about some game, you know? I didn't like this game, whatever. And the guy was like, but it got good review scores or whatever. I'm like, who gives a shit, you know? And he's like, well, you know, The fact of the matter is that reviewers do this professionally, therefore their opinion means a little bit more than us. I'm like, oh, if that's the case, then you have to listen to me because I'm a professional reviewer. That shut his ass up. You know?
What else? Because he didn't even realize that he was talking to somebody who was actually your viewer.
Yeah. Ain't that something? He's like, oh, but these guys are professionals. We have to listen to them. They know more than us. I'm like, okay, listen to me. You know, your opinion is wrong because by your logic, your opinion is wrong. How dumb is that? You know, your opinion is what matters, not some fucking reviewer's opinion. You know?
Here's the thing. I think the one thing about when it comes to reviewers is just like I always at least saw the way the reviews are. Like reviewers are as people that you sort of somewhat align with.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, like if you watch Siskel and Ebert, you sort of tilt one way more than the other. You're either Siskel or more of a Siskel person, or you're more of an Ebert person.
Yeah, I know you're right about that. And also, shout out to our boy Ghost Dini. He says he reads my reviews and then does the opposite of what I do because our tastes are like different, you know. So yeah. Like I was talking about a certain game from Square Enix that's dropping on Tuesday, and he was like, "Oh, I guess I'll like it then," you know. He says that he just does the opposite of what my reviews say, and it always serves him right because we have very different gaming tastes, you know. And that's good.
Here's the thing. Like I think also a review, if by reading it, also should also do that for a person. Like if you're reading a review that has like what is considered a positive review, and the review that you're reading doesn't sound so good to you, then you may not want it.
Yeah, that's right? Happening many times. I've read many reviews that are like rated 9 out of 10 or whatever. And I'll just say, this military first-person shooter, okay, not for me. Doesn't matter if it's a 9 out of 10. I don't like these games, you know?
Yeah.
So that, you know, you got to account for that. Because I hate when people go, oh, this game's highly rated. It must be good. No, maybe it's good for the person who reviewed it, but it may not be good for you, you know?
Yeah. The thing is that like when you're looking toward certain reviewers, some reviewers have you can kind of get some of the reviewers are sort of becoming samey, right? But there are some reviewers that are out there that you're just like, all right, every single review this person has ever done, or like most of them, they've been right on the money. But I usually, to be honest, like at least when it comes from me, reviews, it's like. I mean, like usually, I usually try to get it from a couple of different sources. I mean, to be honest, I mostly ask Tony.
Yeah.
And if Tony has the way Tony talks about it or something like that, then I'm like usually, all right, that sounds like something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't read reviews, just because I write them, so I don't read them. You know,
it doesn't make any sense.
I will read reviews from people I personally know, even though Gary doesn't write reviews anymore, unfortunately.
Yo, man, where you at, Gary?
Yeah. One funny thing, though, is one of my favorite reviewers, Marshall Honoroff, who is the games writer over at Tom's Guide. One of the things I miss is because now that I review the big games, I can't read his review because I've already written it. You know, like I obviously ask his opinion after the fact because he always plays the same games. But I can't be like, oh, I want to read a Marshall's review of God of War. Oh, no, I wrote it, you know.
Oh, no.
But him and I kind of align on that game. But yeah, generally I don't read reviews. Like my opinions are pretty set on games. I know what I like. I know what I dislike. I don't need to be reading reviews. You know,
it's funny, but also
I don't want reviews to potentially taint what I'm doing. Yeah.
The other thing is like I notice that again. Like obviously you get older, you get to know the things that you like and dislike a lot better. I would say. Like I feel like there's a little bit more openness to when I was younger, right? Like there, you know, also because you couldn't see exactly what the games looked like back then, you know, especially when you know you look at the game box and stuff like that. Sometimes they would just hide the back because the game's graphics suck. You don't see any screenshots in the back, but it's like nowadays it seems like you pretty much see every single part of the process, and you can sort of make a pretty good judgment. I don't think it's rare when I've bought a game that I didn't enjoy that I didn't automatically gravitate to initially.
Yeah. Like if I buy a game, I already know what I'm getting into for the most part. There's some disappointments, obviously. Real quick, Jay Shep goes, Tony, have you ever played a game that you wish you could have reviewed, good or bad? No, because that review is work. I'd rather enjoy the game, you know?
That's why
I purposely this year, I'm going to probably review like know more than like the games on one hand that I have fingers on one hand. Like, I'm purposely not going to review as many games because I want to just play them for my enjoyment. Like, for example, with Elden Ring, I was like, I got offered, like, you want to review? I'm like, nope, I want to play that one for fun. You know, go ahead, Carlos.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
And it might be a stupid question, so let me know what it is. Is there a different, like, you know, when we want to eat at a new restaurant, you know, we check reviews. Is there any difference between like that kind of stuff and video games, since they're both, you know, type of consumption that take time, they take money?
I don't read restaurant reviews either. I just ask people I know, what's a good spot for this? And they tell me, then I go. You know, that's it. I don't look at restaurant reviews. That's I understand their purpose, but I've never had the reason to do that. You know, it's just like, hey, we're outside. Hey, this spot is serving this. Let's go check it out. You know, I don't go, oh, let's check out the Yelp reviews. Like, fuck that. Let's just go eat. Well, I'll be the judge after the fact, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. I don't really read reviews in general. Like, even with movies, I don't read reviews. You know, it's like, hey, that movie looks good, I'm going to go see it. You know,
or a movie looks bad, I'm going to avoid it.
And I know I'm me being the professional reviewer saying I don't bother with reviews, but it is what it is. Like Manny said, I know what I like, man. I'm at that point, you know. And also, Manny, just to say, when you go with, also when you're old, you value your time more, so you don't want to waste your time on something that you know you will not like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point of that, you know? Or that you know it's going to be a waste of your time, you know?
Yeah, you chose to review the first game you were reviewing.
I don't understand. I got that joke went over my head, you know. I read restaurant reviews personally. That's cool. All right, man, let's move on. Last question of the night, man.
Whoa!
All right, also from Tumeke. Do other hobbies or forms of entertainment have fan bases that celebrate failures as much as gaming does? You see people on social media looking forward to the discourse, usually with the dude eating popcorn gif, and it really bugs me. Every instance usually ends with me adding a heap of idiots to my block list, which is probably why I don't see all the toxic fanboys Tony talks about. this is a good question, because I'm not really ingratiated in other like fandoms. The only one I'm really like that I converse with regularly are gaming fandoms. I don't really talk to like Star Wars fandoms or other, you know, I don't really. So I honestly don't know, like other fandoms, like within a specific thing, like comic books or whatever, are they more toxic or as toxic as gaming audiences? I honestly don't know.
I don't know. To be honest, I think the toxicity,
I think gamers are probably the worst, though. Like,
I don't know. I think it's because you can hear it. It seems that way.
Yeah, it is anecdotal. I'll give you that. But I will say this, though, right? Gaming is competitive by nature, so it would kind of naturally lead to that. Again, I can't say for other forms. Like, you're not competing when it comes to movies. Movies don't have an inherent, like, oh, I can sit here and watch this movie better than you. You know, like the movies don't have that. Books don't, maybe books, right? I could read faster than you. You know what I'm saying? But games inherently have challenge and competency built in. So that naturally breeds competition, you know, which could lead to toxic shit, you know? What I think. I could be wrong about that.
I don't know. I mean, because, you know, I guess maybe because I don't really have that sort of competitive spirit about things.
I mean, neither do I, but that's what I'm getting. Because to me, it seems like gamers.
You kind of do. Like, you're like, I could do this better than you.
I don't have that. I don't care, dude. I want to do better than me. I don't really give a shit what the other people are doing. I don't care. Okay. You know, think about it. Like, people always go, oh, you're competitive with trophies. No, I'm not. I want to compare it to myself. I don't give a fuck.
No, it's more like, yo, man, can you kick my ass?
Yeah. Most people can kick my ass. Let's be real. You know, I'm not really competitive like that. I don't care. Again, because I don't care what other people are doing. I don't give a shit. You know, like, you do you, bro. You know how many times, I'll list, like, hey, these are the games I played. Oh, I played this many games.
Okay.
Good for you, bro. I don't give a fuck, you know?
I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe it could be the competitive thing, but I also think at the same time, it's just a little bit that, to be honest, it's just internet shit. It's like, I think whatever fandom you are, the loudest people are going to be the ones that are the sort of, you know, the ones that are
all. Yeah, because I've seen some wild shit from, again, you know, the only other one I would see, and it's mostly just videos I see of people reacting to this stuff are like comic book fans, but it's not really comic book fans. It's comic book creators that are fucking awful, you know? You know, I'm not going to get into the specifics, but they, yeah, that stuff could get kind of toxic too. But yeah, I don't know. Again, it's all anecdotal. I only really talk to gaming audiences, but I could understand how they could be more toxic than other fandoms just because of that inherent built-in competitiveness that gaming has that other mediums don't, you know? Again, you want to compare, the closest analog I have for gamers are sports fans, you know, with their rabid nature, you know?
Oh, I mean, like, hey, I mean, man, I guess
we're gonna beat your ass. We're gonna beat you. You're not doing shit but sitting on that couch watching. You're not doing nothing, you know? What is this shit, you know?
Well, I will say this. The sports fans are more toxic than gamers because they'll actually beat the shit out of you in real life.
Oh, yeah, they'll like. I think we answered the question. There you go, sports fans. Yeah, the question was other forms of entertainment. Sports is entertainment, right? So
you know, I would say sports fan because I mean, I remember there was some a friend had some run in at this like sports card show, and it was a bunch filled with a bunch of assholes. There was like two conventions. There was like the nerd convention, and the, you know, like the nerd, like, you know, classic toys and stuff, and then the card show. And a bunch of the people went into the sports fans that went into that card show, a bunch of dickheads.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, you think you're better than us? You collect fucking cards, pieces of cardboard.
They ain't even better than my figures.
No, you by the
way. Not even signed.
Yeah, I'm not going to go off on those guys, but I just find it funny how the same people who play fantasy football will shit on gamers. You play football, bro.
You're literally playing a real life RPG.
Yeah.
You're literally looking at the stats and then you're seeing with the, no, it's RPG just without the fucking the anime kid with the pointy hair sticking up. Yeah. Same shit.
All right, I think we answered the question, sports fans. They're sports more toxic fans than gamers. There you go.
I will say another
one. But on social media, though, Carlos.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Shit. Sports Twitter. Sports Twitter is something else, man.
Oh God. There you go. There's your answer.
But I will say this. I don't know if politics.
That's not an form of entertainment, though.
Well, it is for some people.
That shit is more toxic. Absolutely. You know?
That is fucking vile.
Yeah. Dude, I'm literally like, there's people I've known in this industry for years. I'm talking about almost a decade. They don't know where my politics are. That's on purpose. I don't talk about that shit publicly because I will be canceled. Absolutely. You know, those people are vile, man. But like on both sides, you know what I'm saying? So stay away from that shit, please. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes down to him and sports fans, you're right. You're right. They take the cake, man. They're fucking. Yeah, toxic fucks, you know. All right, man. I think, that's it. We're done. Good show, man. Do we have anything to plug?
No, and is there an I Am Negan, though?
Oh, shit.
No, I Am Negan, but we'll probably record tomorrow the next step installment of, I don't even know, the Last of Us spoiler review show for the Coalition on the Coalition gaming channel. So if you go to the Coalition Gaming on YouTube, you'll be able to find it, and hopefully we'll get an episode by tomorrow night for reviewing episode 2 of The Last of Us. Apparently, people are liking it, so hopefully I like it as well, and we'll see what Richard Bailey Jr. and Adam Vale think about the episode as well, or the hosts.
And you get to critique Neil Druckmann's first foray into directing a film.
Is it his first directing ever, other than besides gaming?
That's a good question.
I think it is.
Yeah,
I
mean, we'll be interested.
Maybe he did a shitty independent film or two.
Or he did a commercial, you know?
No, I don't think he did commercials.
You know,
we'll see how he does.
Yeah. Also, my review of Forspoken will be up in about 9 hours from now, people. Or if you're listening, it's probably already up now. That's going to cause some controversy, even though I think my review is going to be in line with other reviewers, you know. By the way, that's the other misconceptions. Like, do reviewers talk to each other? No, I have no idea what the other people wrote because the game's not out, you know. I wrote it, you know, I played the game, did my thing, and I'm not going to tell you what I thought, but I think you could kind of guess, you know.
I know, you know. I know what one other person that we know thinks about. Right, who, that's who, all I'll say.
Who?
Oh, wait. We'll talk about it after.
Okay, okay. Man, but remember, this is a PlayStation 5 exclusive. And you know what comes with exclusive games on social media? Get ready for the chaos. It's going to be brutal tomorrow, man.
Although I will say this. I don't think they might surprise me, but I don't think the PlayStation 5 fanboys are going to champion this as much as other types of PlayStation exclusives. I could be wrong, but we'll see.
I think it's more of the Xbox guys. Remember, you had people went after Tunic because it was an exclusive. This is more high profile, so... Oh, yeah, get ready. And they'll use anything for ammo. So, yeah. Oh, man. All right. Anyway, make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube and join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You'll find us on any podcast app on the internet. Throwdown Show towards Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to past episodes. And, yeah, if you've been watching us on YouTube and enjoyed the content, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified when our premieres go live. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch. Muted. It's been real party, people. And Brian Manjoma.
I am very eagerly waiting to see how Forspoken reviews.
Get ready. That's all I'm going to say. Get ready. Get ready. All right, people. We'll see you on Thursday. Later.
Later.
Peace.